wish I had a nickel for every minute I spent out in front of some joker's apartment waiting for him to come out after having been in some nice warm sheets.
Yeah, I hope Simon's in quick.
Come on, Alex.
Is it Simonton?
Ain't the bluebird of happiness.
Welcome back, Vice fans, to the Vice of Miami podcast. Tim, how you doing? What's going on, my friend?
Doing really good. You know, it's getting warmer down here in North Carolina. Grass is starting to green. The landscaping company's coming in, putting in a mulch. Flowers are coming up, daffodils, snow crocuses, everything. So it's spring is not too far around the corner here. And this coming
week, starting to look like Miami down there.
I wouldn't quite go that far.
No palm trees.
We got evergreens, pine trees, and
nice.
And mountains. So it's going here. It's not bad.
Well, you've got the steel mountains in Miami, the skyscrapers, and all that.
There you go.
And nothing going on here. Same old stuff. Working and living it up and having fun. Weather's getting good here too in the Chicago area. Had a couple of big storms rumble through last night, but you can't complain. So what do you think? We should get this going, Tim?
Let's do it, Mark.
All righty. I hope you enjoyed the last show, Red Tape. So as always, sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy the Vice of Miami podcast covering season 3, episode 20, By Hook or By Crook.
Mark, this episode was written by Dick Wolf, and the teleplay was by John Shulian. It was directed by Don Johnson. The original air date, it was March 20th, 1987, and it is 64th episode overall in the series.
And the plot for this episode, a call girl witnesses two henchmen take her client and ultimately murder him, causing her to go into hiding, confiding, and staying with a friend of who was a lover of Crockett. Unknown to him, there's far more to her than he knows about. Okay, let's cover the guest stars and the co-stars. We try to be brief with these, but each one of these pretty much had a lot of information within the few tidbits we could find. So it's going to be a mouthful. So please bear with us. We'll try to get through this, you know, swiftly as we can. But we are going to cover the key points of everyone. So first up, we've got Melanie Richards Griffith, who appeared as Christine von Marburg, the socialite and owner of CVM Enterprises, Caprice Escort Service, and the girlfriend of James Sonny Crockett. She was born August 9th, 1957 in New York City, and she's an American actress. Griffith is the daughter of actress Tippi Hedren from the Birds movie and producer, former actor Peter Griffith. No, not Peter Griffin from Family Guy, Peter Griffith. She began her career at 2 months appearing in TV commercials. Then at 12, she appeared in her first movie, Smith. She has an extensive catalog of shows and movies. Her marriage to Don Johnson here takes center stage. Griffith and Johnson married in 1976, but divorced 6 months later. Then she was married to actor Steve Bauer for about 6 years. Griffith, who up to then had a history of drug and alcohol abuse, checked herself in rehab in 1988, and then she reconciled with Don. They remarried in June of 1989, and they had a daughter, Dakota, born in October of 89. In 1995, Griffith left Johnson due to his own substance abuse problems, and they divorced in 1996. She later married Antonio Banderas that same year until their 2015 divorce. And they've got a daughter, Stella. She also continued to battle substance abuse and went into rehab twice in 2000 and 2009.
Mark, next up is Denise Katrina Matthews, also known as Vanity, who appeared as hooker Allie Ferrand. Born January 4th, 1959 in Niagara Falls, Canada, she was a Canadian singer, songwriter, model, actress, later a Christian preacher. And she began her career as a model, appearing in commercials for toothpaste as well as posing for Playboy twice in 1985 and 88, and appearing as an album cover for the rhythm and blues group Cameo twice. She had a group named Vanity Six, which toured with Prince as well as The Time in 1982 and 83 before Vanity left the group and Prince, even though she was slated to be the female lead in his movie Purple Rain, and she was replaced by Apollonia Cotero. She recorded several solo albums, but found only moderate success, then recorded songs for the soundtrack to and acted in Action Jackson, and her recording career ended. Vanity was also addicted to drugs during this time, and that would come back to haunt her later. Vanity Matthews was married once to Anthony Smith, former pro football player, in 1995 until their divorce in 96. Her drug abuse became so severe she nearly died in 94 and had to take dialysis 5 times a day due to kidney damage caused by that abuse, eventually undergoing a transplant in 97. She became a born-again Christian after a near-death experience, renounced her vanity persona and everything associated with it, and began traveling the globe as a Christian speaker. She died from kidney failure, the result of her earlier drug abuse, on February 15th, 2016, at the age of 57.
Hey, Tim, guess who returns?
Izzy, man.
Izzy. Martin Ferrell returns as Izzy.
Next up is Veronica Cartwright, who appeared as a society dame that hosted a party. Born April 20th, 1949 in Bristol, England, she's an English actress. Cartwright was born in England, but her acting career began in America, starring in 1958 movie In Love and War. Other movie roles include The Birds, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Right Stuff, among many others. TV roles included Twilight Zone, Leave it to Beaver, and the 1985 remake X-Files, Gotham Knights. She has been married 3 times, first to Richard Gates from 1968 until their divorce in 1972, Stanley Goldstein in 1976 until their divorce, and then director-actor Richard Compton in 1982 until his death in 2007.
We're getting through this, people. I know it's a mouthful. Next up, we've got Louis Vincent Albano, Captain Lou Albano. He appeared as one of the unnamed henchmen for Ken Togaru. He was born July 29th, 1933 in Rome, Italy. He was a wrestler, manager, and actor. Albano began his wrestling career in 1953, but he really had no luck as a singles wrestler. In 1969, Albano retired as a wrestler and became a manager at the suggestion of then WWF champion Bruno Sammartino. Using his mic skills and grating personality, he became the manager of heels, which are basically the bad guys. Albano, along with singer Cyndi Lauper, became part of what was called the Rock and Wrestling Connection in the mid-1980s, which was credited with bringing professional wrestling into the mainstream. Albano made several cameos in 2 of Lauper's videos, Girls Just Want to Have Fun and Time After Time, and he began to assume full credit for Lauper's success on WWF TV shows. Albano had been obese most of his life, but lost 150 pounds in 1995 after a health scare. He suffered 2 heart attacks after that, one in 2005, and the one that ultimately took his life, October 14th, 2009, at his Carmel, New York home at the age of 76.
And Mark, I really got a mouthful here. The next
good luck
one
with
is
this one.
Afa Amituana E. Anoa E., who appeared as one of Kenneth Tagaro's henchmen for November 20th.
In the wrestling word. He was just known as Afa. Just call him Afa.
Afa. Afa. In the wrestling room, it was Afa. Born on November 21st, 1942 in Samoa, he's a Samoan professional wrestler and manager. Anoa'i got into professional wrestling in the early 70s, trained by Rocky Johnson and Pete Mavia, who is the father and grandfather of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, then made his debut in 71 and brought in his brother Sika, born in 45, and formed the Wild Samoans, a tag team that won 3 World Wrestling Federation championships. Other acting roles, he was in the movies Body Slam and Mr. Nanny. Anoa'i married his wife Lynn in 1970, and they have 5 children.
Trained by the father and grandfather of, if you smell what the Rock is cooking.
Mm-hmm.
He was no candy ass. All right, next up, we've got William Boggs III, who appeared as another unnamed person, a TV host of Miami at Midday, which was a talk show which was highlighting Christine von Marburg. Born July 11th, 1944, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, he's an American host and presenter. Boggs began his career working in TV news, working at WNBC in New York, if you know, you know. Then working on CBS Game Shows, another New York show, Midday Live, until he created the show TV Dinners and Bill Boggs. He also appeared in Trading Places, Pinheiro, Spin City, and Chappelle's Show. He has a son from a brief marriage to actress Linda Thorson. Tim, it looks like you got all the long.
Oh, yes. And this is our last long one. And we have George Hosato Takai, who appeared as money launderer Kenneth Tagara. Born April 20th, 1937, Los Angeles, California. And when I first saw him, I go, oh, it's Sulu. Takai's acting career began in 1955 as a voiceover in Godzilla Raids Again. His most famous role, he played physicist Hikaru Sulu on Star Trek, and the role would transform his life forever. When the series was picked up in 1966, Sulu was transferred to the helm, and he remained on the show for the three seasons it aired. He appeared in all six movies, and he even made captain. He also appeared in Star Trek Voyager, marking the original's 30th anniversary, and in 2007 appeared in the fan-made Star Trek New Voyages, an internet-based series. He also has an extensive TV and movie roles, but he really couldn't shake the Star Trek role. Takai's family was interred in two relocation centers during World War II, first in Arkansas, then in California, where they remained until the war ended. Takai is heavily involved in keeping what happened to his and other families in the public consciousness, especially the Japanese American National Museum. In 2005, Takai announced that he was gay and that he had been in a committed relationship with Brad Altman since 1987. In 2008, after California Supreme Court overturned the state laws against same-sex marriage, Takai and Altman were married in a public ceremony. In 2009, they were the first same-sex couple ever to appear on the Newlywed Game and won $10,000 for the Japanese American National Museum.
I remember his one of his famous lines, "Target that torpedo and fire." He's got that tone and that voice and cadence.
That Sulu voice, yes.
Sulu. All right, now wrapping up, we got our co-stars here, Janet Constable as Suzu and Stephen Edward as Kingman Draper. Miami Voice in the News, we would like to wish a belated happy birthday to EJO, Edward James Olmos. We could call him that, right? Because we're in the Vice guys.
Yes, EJO.
EJO. He turned 77 on February 24th. I heard it's my birthday. Where's my birthday cake?
And we have something a little bit more on actor George Takei. He recently guest voiced the character of Ko the Face Stealer for the Netflix fantasy drama series Avatar: The Last Airbender. The current season premiered on February 22nd, 2024.
Okay, we're going to start off with a discussion here for Hooker by Crook. We're opening up here to the OCB team posing as gamblers at a ritzy yacht party. Don't know where exactly they're at. Maybe it's close by the St. Vitus dance. But anyway, Crockett, as Burnett here, is talking with the guest, Christine von Marburg. Cooper interrupts and tells Burnett that they got business to do with someone who's leaving. So he's got to excuse himself. Don does here, or Burnett, I should say. So later on, they follow this guy that they were watching. And his name is Chuck Symington. He enters his apartment out of the limo with somebody. And he's, I think they got a bottle of champagne in his hand with two glasses. The typical, we had a party where somebody look at us while we're making a scene, right? So anyways, the obvious drunk pair make it up to his apartment upstairs. Chuck opens his apartment door, enters, and then the two big goons, Captain Lou Albano and Afi, they suddenly exit and chase the woman. She barely escapes in this elevator here. Obviously, she knows something's going on. Back in this room, Chuck is thrown off the balcony and does a nice little soft landing on the street next to the Tessarosa. So Crockett and Tubbs check up on him, and he's pretty much DOA right there, right then and there. So now we're at an unidentified apartment somewhere. This unidentified woman that was with Chuck is seen frantically packing to leave town in a hurry. So now we're at OCB. Meanwhile, there, Stan gives the team of the rundown on Symington's pedigree, on who he is, what he's good for. Crockett thinks he was there laundering money. And then Marty asks about the unknown woman and told the shot that she had went underground. Nobody's seen her, but they're going to look for her. Crockett and Tubbs there, they're going to return to this party yacht to see if Christine knows or whoever hosted it knows. But before they leave, Crockett runs Christine's name in their computer there to get her phone number. Obviously, he wanted to continue this date that he was probably trying to set up on the boat. So he gets her phone number, and you can see Tubbs in the background looking like, what's going on over there, man?
And by today's standards, that would get you in a lot of trouble as a cop.
You can't do that.
Because that's a no-no.
That's a big no-no.
So now we make a quick scene here at the residence of a man later identified as Kenneth Tagaro. And he is perturbed that the woman that was with Symington got away, as she can identify him. And he tells his goons, Afi and Captain Lou, to find her and kill her. And then now we're at the yacht party, or return to the yacht. Crockett and Tubbs speak with the host about the unknown woman. The woman provides the name of Symington's companion, who was named Allie. She only knows that she's a model, but doesn't know the name of the model agency. She knows that Allie had a boudoir photo shoot at De La Moreno Photography.
Only put a damper on my party. Honestly, I couldn't have been more surprised. Murder. Dear Charles. You see, this type of thing just doesn't happen in our circle. We're more likely to get robbed. Give me your money, hand over those municipal bonds. Murder. Murder, it's just so lower class. Do forgive me. Sometimes I'm such a princess.
I think it's funny this lady didn't have a name. It was just the lady who hosted yacht party, which sounds like she could be on the board of a homeowner association. But anyway, Crockett and Tubbs, they arrive at De La Moreno Photos. And guess who that is? De La Moreno Photos.
That's so awesome.
They find out that it was their old pal, Izzy, who did Allie's photo shoot. He was, he's a photographer of models. I'm sure it didn't go astray, right?
And exactly.
Tubbs here, they're interrupting one of his sessions. I think the girl's kind of freaked out. She's not naked or nothing, obviously, on TV, but she's in a bikini. She runs into the bathroom. They ask him about Allie, and then Izzy says he's treating it like a priest penitent relationship. Crockett threatens jail time for Izzy if he doesn't give up the information. And he goes, oh, I get that Ali Faran. He gives up the name, address, and a photo of her. So they leave, and this chick comes out, and I guess they resume their photography session. So now Crockett and Tubbs, they go to Ali's apartment here, and they find that she cleared out in a hurry, obviously. They arrange for a SWITEC to conduct surveillance of the building. Stand by, you know, take a peek at the place. Maybe she'll show up again.
And then we move to Crockett making a phone call with Christine to set up a dinner date at Amelia's restaurant. At dinner, she asks him what line of work he's in and that allows him access to her phone number. He replies, little bit of this, little bit of that. When asked, Christine tells Crockett that she's the owner of CVM Enterprises and gives him the same line, little bit of this, little bit of that, when he asks the nature of her business. Crockett brings her back to her apartment and he thinks he might get lucky and he's told good night, but, you know, try again tomorrow. Let's get together tomorrow. She enters to find Allie hiding inside. Allie tells Christine about Symington's death and she asked if she can stay there for a while until she could get her things together to leave town. And Christine agrees.
You always said that you'd help me, right?
Yeah. What?
Chucky. They killed Chucky.
What?
They killed Chucky. Oh, God. I got away.
Oh, God.
I'm so scared.
It's okay, honey. It's okay. It's all right.
Christine here had a great apartment overlooking the coast, overlooking the sea a little bit, because I think they were outside walking along her balcony. It's real nice. So anyway, back at OCB here, Crockett tells Tubbs about Christine's pedigree. And in a briefing with Marty, Crockett tells him they've got a zip code on the whereabouts of Allie. We'll see what goes on. Marty has Gina and Trudy check on Allie's background. Marty tells the team here that at first glance, Symington had a clean record. Back at Izzy's, we find him leaving for a photo shoot with all his gear in his hands, ready to go out the door, when Tagaro's thugs show up and they shake him down for info on Allie Ferran. I think they shake him down and his apartment. They pretty much, it was like a wrestling scene. They're knocking everything over, tables and whatever. Mm-hmm. It was pretty funny. It's pretty funny. Good comedic duo. So after being worked over, he gives them her address. So Crockett and Tubbs now show up later, and we're assuming Izzy called them to find a distraught Izzy. Oh, man, they shook me up here. Crockett wants to know how those guys knew about her, and after being pressed, Izzy tells them she's a hooker who works for Caprice Escort Agency. Crockett is livid at Izzy, and then he calls Stan, who is practicing magic in the surveillance van here, and he asks him to have Gina and Trudy do a check on the Caprice Escort Service. And he tells Stan to be on lookout for quote unquote leg breakers, huh? And I like this little quote here from Izzy. They defoliated my freedom.
Defoliate.
Defoliate.
And what reward do I get? Huh? For telling you that Godzilla and Rodan came by and immortalized me.
Immortalized me. he does wonders on butchering the English language.
Yes, he does. So now, back at Christine's, in conversation, Allie tells Christine that she will be vacating the apartment soon so she will not cramp Christine's relationship with Burnett. Christine tells Allie she is serious about Burnett. And before leaving Christine's, Allie disguises herself with a wig and sunglasses. And then next we find Stan on surveillance across the street from the main entrance to Allie's building. She arrives by cab, exits, and goes inside. Stan sees this woman, looks at Allie's photo, but does not recognize her. Later, in a back-and-forth scene, we find Crockett doing a dance with Christine. Then quick scene switch to Allie's, where she enters to find Tagaro's thugs waiting for her. They eventually gag and kill her. Dun-dun-dun. Yeah, plot thickens.
You know what was going to happen. She wasn't going to get away. She was
no.
So we're OCB. The whole team here is on scene to investigate Allie's death. And then Marty questions Stan on how come he missed her coming in. And Stan replies, I mean, rightfully so, that if it was closer, he may have recognized her because she came in. She was in a disguise. She had a wig on, I think, you know, a lot of makeup. So, hey, I mean, it's not like he's going to be parked right by the front door, right?
Mm-hmm.
Slipped on by. Again, you can't conduct surveillance on someone's front porch. Crockett and Tubbs hear the defense white exposition. Hey, Crockett and Tubbs, they arrive at office building of Caprice Escort Service. Crockett also sees that Christine's business, CVM, is in the same building. Wow, what a coincidence. What a coinkydink. Crockett and Tubbs enter Caprice to find a phone sex operation in progress. And then the all too uncooperative receptionist tells them that all this is legal. She's informed that one of her girls, Allie, was murdered. Tubbs politely asks her for her client list, and the receptionist says that she has to go through the boss, but won't give up his name. His? How do you know it's him? Crockett wants the boss to call him with the client list, or he will make her life miserable for Caprice.
And then after this, Crockett decides to pop in and see Christine at her place of business. She finds Burnett and Cooper, but looks visibly upset.
I think the jig is up, right? I think we know the jig is up.
Yes.
I mean, by her look, she walks around the corner and she's just got this stern look on her face, right? Not happy, not glad.
I think she was upset because of Allie's death. That's what I think she was upset about.
Really? I think it was because I think she knows.
You think it was because
she's on to Crockett, I think.
There you go.
We'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. Burnett tells her that he will bring pizza and wine to her place for dinner later that evening.
Sonny?
Hi.
CVM Enterprises.
Are you all right?
Can I help you? Yeah. No, I'm fine. I just had some upsetting news. This land that we wanted to buy and build condos on, the competition just outbid us.
Oh. Hey, what kind of fool would sell to your competition? Don't they know you're businesswoman of the year?
You're kidding.
Front page.
Well, Chamber of Commerce is easily swayed.
Well, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Well, this calls for a little celebration. How about if I take you to dinner tonight?
Oh, I don't think so.
Hey, are you giving me the brush off, lady?
No, nothing like that.
Then I'll be by it around 8 o'clock with a pizza and a bottle of champagne.
Pizza? Pizza.
What happened to going out?
Yeah.
That was a quick change.
That later. That's pizza and champagne. That's kind of like that's a Switek move.
Yes. Later, we find the pair back in bed playing the cat and mouse secrets game. And Burnett only offers his birthday as being July 29th as part of his personal life. He asks for one of her secrets, and she tells him she's going to be on the Miami Midday News for an interview.
Or more like an Izzy meal. Hey, I got some pizza and champagne.
Champagne.
So now we got the scene with Tagaro and Sonny watching Christine's interview. Not together, obviously. She's on TV. Tagaro is at his place and Sonny is at OCB, and they're watching the same interview. During this interview, we find out that she comes from an esteemed business family headed by her father, who is a munitions dealer, Klaus von Marburg. And then the reporter here, after the niceties, he drops a bombshell on Christine that our investigation found that blah, blah, that she runs a call girl operation under the name Caprice Escort. He calls her a madam, and then she categorically denies these accusations. So while we're at OCB, it's kind of going back and forth with Crockett watching this at OCB. While Crockett's watching this, Trudy's trying to tell Crockett that she found out the same info. Dun, dun, dun. The jig's really up now. He knows about her. And that's why I'm thinking previously, she now knows about him.
So then we find out that Trudy did a check on all corporations and found out that Caprice is owned and operated out of the Dutch Antilles. She also found out that Christine was the principal shareholder. Marty enters the conversation and tells the team he received a call from downtown that they need to pick up Christine von Marburg, and he sends Jeannie and Trudy to pick her up.
It was just luck that I found it. I ran all Florida corporations, nodded. Then I ran all the U.S. corporations. Finally, I tried foreign corporations with subsidiaries doing business in Florida. Caprice is owned by a holding company in the Dutch Antilles, which is subsidiary of a Delaware corporation, and the principal stockholder is Christine von Marburg.
I just got a phone call from downtown. We're to pick up a madam by the name of Christine von Marburg. Gina, Trudy, please.
So anyway, we find Crockett now just staring into space, and he laments to Tubbs that first he was involved with a junkie, and now hooker, junkie being Dr. Teresa. It seems as if he's always falling for the players. He tells Tubbs to pull the phone records on Christine and Symington. Later, we find Crockett in the communications room doing his own check. Tubbs enters and reports that Christine made 42 calls to Symington and 8 to Kenny Tagaro. Crockett says, I don't know him. And the communication tech, I remember saying, now you do. He tells him that Kenny is the CEO of Bignington Group, of which Chuck Symington was the CFO.
Later on, we find Christine being held in an interview room at OCB when Crockett enters wearing his badge. If she didn't know at the office, she knows now. He's a cop. He asks her lawyer leaves so she could speak with Christine. Christine okays this and the suit leaves. Christine asks Crockett if this was all a setup, and he tells her he did not have one clue. She replies that they tricked each other, and Crockett asks her, why are you a madam? And Christine tells him at first it was the excitement, then to spite her family. Then it became a job, earning her a lot of cash. She tells Crockett that she did not do any hooking. So anyway, Crockett asks about Symington. Christine arranged a date and then told Tagaro. She confirmed Crockett's earlier suspicion that Symington was laundering money for Tagaro, but skimmed a little bit off the top. That's why he got whacked. She told Crockett that Allie was just an innocent bystander. She also then told Crockett that Tagaro was a client at first who became a good friend and a mentor her in the corporate world. She said, obviously, that she owed him, and then Crockett asked her enough to take a murder rap for it. And then she replies, business is business, and didn't want to go to jail. Crockett tells her, set up a meet with Burnett and Cooper, you know, Crockett and Tubbs there, and tell Tagaro to make the deal for cash, as her funds were frozen when she was busted. She asks Crockett if she's going to be set free if the sting operation is successful, and Crockett tells her, decision's not up to me. She'll have to wear a wire, obviously, and then she tells Crockett Tagaro is in love with her and it could get rough. And then Crockett just retorts, using her words, as you said, business is business.
Then later we have Crockett, Tubbs, and Stan doing surveillance on Tagaro's, and they listen in as Christine lays out the deal for Tagaro. She tells him she found someone to take Symington's place as the launderer. When asked, she tells Tagaro that the point man is an acquaintance named Burnett. His partner is a banker named Cooper. Tagaro retorts that bankers are smarmy. Bankers are smarmy. Christine tells Tagaro that if she makes the connection, Cooper and Burnett will give her a piece of the action so she can leave town. Tagaro asks what he gets in return for doing his deal, and she said she would be a friend. And he says, oh, you could do better than that, insinuating a roll in the hay. In a quick scene at OCB, Crockett lays out the details of the takedown. No one is to move in until they have a hard deal with Tagaro. And then we see Christine waiting in the conference room outside this briefing.
And I'm thinking, did they just leave her there with all this police information desks? He just left her there.
Yeah, but if you remember, she's with him, though, at Tagaro's. Oh, you'll find out.
That's right. But why didn't she get up then and leave?
I don't know. Whatever.
Anyway, we are now at Tagaro's here. Cooper and Burnett now, they're sitting around telling Tagaro that they're making, the deal making is good business to bail out Christine. They will wash the money for 15% of the take. And then Tagaro tells them that it was unfortunate that Christine did not tell him that she made friends with the cops. The jig is really up here now. Tagaro exits the room, and then we have the typical Miami Vice shootout begin between the goons and Crockett and Tubbs. The goons here drop like flies, and then Christine joins the shootout. I don't know where she got the gun from, and she shoots Tagaro before he killed Crockett. He was pretty much drawn down on him. He could have got a good shot up, but she popped them off first.
And then in the final scene, we are on a St. Vitus dance and Sonny is seen fishing. Christine shows up to say goodbye to Crockett before she leaves town. She tells him the newspaper editor and reporter from Channel 8, and it's not the same guy that interviewed her, because this wouldn't make sense, were crucifying her with their stories, were her biggest clients. She said all of them were bastards. And Crockett asks about himself, and she says that he was the biggest one of them all. She thanks Crockett for having the charges dropped, kisses him, and leaves. And then we have the freeze frame at the end.
Yeah, you're the biggest bastard, but you kind of saved my ass, right?
Yeah, you just kicked me loose.
But she saved him. She could have been dead.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk to you?
Sure. Fish aren't biting anyway.
A good song here.
I wanted to say goodbye. I'm leaving the country.
Hey, you've been taking a little heat in the press lately. I don't blame you.
Yeah, I still can't believe it. You know the newspaper that's been crucifying me? Well, the publisher was one of my biggest clients. And so is that little worm that does the editorials on Channel 8. They're bastards, all of them.
That go for me, too?
You might be the biggest one of all.
You'll probably get a copyright strike on that one on YouTube, I'm sure.
Why is that? Oh, that...
The music.
The music.
It's in the
show. It's in the show.
Yes, it's in the show. We're critiquing it. It's a great song. I love the verse and the chorus and the way the piano comes in. Oh, whatever. IMDb gives this episode a 7.6. Not bad. Tim, what do you think?
You know, Mark, this was another good episode from Dick Wolf and Company. Wasn't as strong as made the last couple, but it did offer a good plot line. Once again, we find Sonny falling for a woman of questionable character, who was an integral part of the story. It was also great having Izzy back and seeing him get his neck figuratively stepped on by Tagaro's henchmen. We have murder, mayhem, good police work, and another, as usual, Miami Vice shootout. But there's one thing, Mark, that I've noticed, that Dick Wolf moved away from the rip from the headlines stories that were present earlier in the season. You know, and as we move towards the end of this season, let's hope for a continued strong finish. Overall, I would go with the 7.6.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, not really doing the rip from the headlines. And like I've said in the past couple ones, is kind of reminiscent of season one and season two in the style, story flow and all that. But I like this episode too, Tim. Wasn't anything explosive, but just an all-around great story, good characters. In another way in which little Crockett gets big Crockett in the big trick bag here, just like in Teresa and Yankee Dollar. At least this time it isn't drugs. So just sex. Oh yeah. And a murder. Don Johnson, like we said, directed this. So I wonder if that's why Melanie showed up and had more love scenes in one episode than Tubbs does. Anyway, we have other big actors too. Captain Lou Albano and Afa and George Takei. Captain Lou and Afa are always big showmen during wrestling, so it's very appropriate they roughhouse Izzy in his place. But it was nice seeing those three big stars showing up here. All Vice again shows up in another episode, like I said, that's reminiscent of season one and season two. Like I asked, why didn't Castillo pull Crockett off the case if he knew and was just being snarky when he said, go find this madam, blah, blah, blah. Unless he didn't know that Crockett wasn't better with Christine, but one of those unknowns, right? Another left interest here gets off easy, and just overall a good episode, Tim. Time for the music of the episode. First up, we've got 30,000 Feet by Broken Homes. That's the opening sequence at the party and Symington's death. Lovato by Bill Bergman. That's on the Society Dames yacht. Split Decision by Steve Winwood. That's when Crockett and Tubbs are Split Decision by Steve Winwood. That's when Crockett and Christine are making love while Allie is killed. And then Holding Back the Years, awesome song by Simply Red. That's the ending when Crockett and Christine were on the boat.
And in this episode, we do get some Jan Hammer music that returns. First up is Crockett's theme, which is played throughout the episode, and Crockett's return when Crockett and Christine have dinner.
Okay, let's check out our goofs, fun facts, and locations. The first fun fact here, we've got Crockett using a Commodore Amiga computer when looking up Christine's information. Back then, way back then, it was a major PC player during the mid-1980s.
And then, Mark, our location that we have is the Grove Towers at 2843 South Bayshore Drive in Coconut Grove, which is the exterior of Christine's apartment.
And a goof here. When Crockett and Tubbs visit Izzy's photography studio, the sign outside of his studio misspells the word boudoir as boudior, B-O-U-D-I-O-R. Also, boudior. Izzy's sign reads, intimate moment captured tastily, instead of the correct word, tastefully. But that's Izzy. It's Izzy. Maybe these are intentional mistakes made by Izzy's character, but I'm going to say, yeah, this is normal for Izzy.
Mm-hmm. And then we have one fun fact. You know, and it's interesting to note that Tubbs has very few lines in this episode. None at all during the two scenes involving Izzy, and aside from the climactic gunfight, does nothing of any real importance.
Yeah, well, he just came off a big Tubbs sink.
Yeah, he had a couple of Tubbs such. Yes, correct.
All right, let's check over the trivia portion of this episode. In the last episode, we asked you, when Tubbs, Eddie, and Bobby walked up the stairs in the Nemo Hotel, there were several names painted on the wall of a makeshift mural. What were the women's names? They were Liz, Rita, and Linda.
And this show's trivia question is in two parts. When Crockett and Tubbs went to visit Izzy, what was hanging from the front door? Part two, what medical device was Izzy wearing during this scene? You can post your answers on this episode's Facebook post, or you can email us at MiamiVice@duck.com.
And we've arrived at Snurd's Chalkboard of Wisdom, okay? Where we hope to inspire, enlighten, or make you snicker a little. In both the world of Miami Vice and our current world at large, we encounter many challenges we work to overcome. And in the interest of creating a family-friendly atmosphere through the show and our social media, we'd like to offer some parting thoughts, a quote, phrase, or words of encouragement or funny quip to you, our listeners. Because without you, our friends, we'd be talking to ourselves, and that's what we say, you are our friends. Because that's what we consider all of us who follow our show and social media, our friends. This episode's quote is, "The reason people find it so hard to be happy is that they always see the past better than it was, the present worse than it is, and the future less resolved than it will be." And it's from Marcel Pagnol.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us on this review. We hope you found this episode exciting and entertaining. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to our podcast and following us on our social media channels to stay updated on our latest episodes. On Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, we are Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support means everything to us, and if you have a spare moment, we would be incredibly grateful if you could leave us a rating and review on those channels. Thanks again for listening, and we can't wait to share more with you soon. So we'll catch you next time on the Vice of Miami Podcast on show number 69, covering episode 21, Knock Knock, Who's There? Now...
Beat it, punks.